Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Hey, man. Good morning. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. And I wanted to mention again that our mission here is to get everybody and anybody in the United States of America to stand up, speak out, and say what needs to be said, doggone it, with regards to tennis and what will help get us back on top again. That's our mission, and we always say that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing, for good women to do nothing. We need you to stand up, and all you need to do is, you know, address issues, not people, and make sure that you stay professional. Nobody can find fault if you do that, and we need you to do that each and every week here on American Tennis Program. This is the UR Tennis Network, and you can get the programs on your iTunes app and on Blog Talk Radio, but just go to your iTunes app. If you want to send something at chuckcreasy.net is my website, chuckcreasy.net. And then also, if you want to be a guest on the show, call area code 714-583-6853, and we'll get you on there. But listen, folks, we're going to skip some of the things that we normally do because we have limited time today with some of our guests, and I think we've already got a couple. I think, is this Bob and Brian on, or is Dick on yet?
Yeah, this is Dick.
Hey, Dick, how are you? Is Dick Stockton?
Hello.
And is Brian or Bob is on?
Bob's on.
Bob's on. Brian's not yet on. He'll be on in a little bit here. But guys, we're here for a special reason today, and that is to pay tribute and try to get something on the computer and on the cyberspace or whatever they call it, where we can talk about the great Clarence Mabry, who was your coach at Trinity University and one of the greatest men that I've known in tennis. And because of the time that I was coming up about the same time as you guys, but I knew what was going on there in Texas and in Trinity. And so, Dick, I think we've only got you for about 15 minutes or so. Is that right? You've got to get back on the court.
Right. That's correct, Chuck.
Well, I first of all, I appreciate you guys coming on, and I'll read all of your accolades, you know, Dick, when you get off toward later on in the show. And nobody who knows anything about tennis needs to say much about the dynasty that Clarence created there at Trinity University. And he started the program, actually, which was amazing. Most people don't realize that. 1955, I think, that. And, you know, the things that he did as far as the example that he set and the way that he molded a team out of, you know, all the tremendous stars you guys were when you were coming up, and he molded you all into a team. And, you know, I guess I'll start out there, guys. Who was Clarence Mabry, the man, and who was the coach, and who was he as a teacher? You know, Dick, I mean, you go ahead if you'd like to start out there.
Well, I think, I think he was, obviously he was a great man, and we loved playing for him. We had a very special team, and, you know, but I always thought Clarence was a great teacher. And, you know, I'll never forget the first day when Bob and I were at Trinity. We went in at the same time, and the first day of practice, when Clarence had us all sitting up in these stands above the courts, and he basically said to us, you know, we all thought we were pretty hotshot tennis players, but he said, you know, you guys, you know, some of you may go on to greater things in tennis, do this, do that, whatever, but he said, you know, the reason you're here, believe it or not, is to get an education. That's always got to be number one, because, you know, tennis can only take you so far, and who knows where that's going to end up. But we thought we were there just to play tennis, but he set us straight on day one. And he was just a great man to be around, and I think Bobby feels the same way. And that on that particular day, you know, he became our coach, and he stayed my coach until January 26, 2013, the day he passed away.
You know, what you're saying is what all great people are remembered for. You know, I remember about 1980, I was asked, like, who are the people you respect? I'd been in coaching about 5 years. I said, who are the people you respect most in coaching or you would trust the most? And the guy we had on last week, Vesa Ponta, said this very well. He says that your respect and the trust has to be earned. Those are the things that are critical. But I remember I named five guys, I think, from Texas. I named Tut Bartson. I named Dave Snyder. I named Bob Mapes down there at the HEB Center. I named Clarence. And it was basically, as a young coach just starting out, and I didn't even know many of you guys at that time, but you respected him, and that was the first thing. And I think, Brian, are you on the line?
I am, Chuck. How are you?
Oh, great. Okay, we got Bob and Dick on here, and, you know, Dick's got to go.
All right.
So I'm going to let you guys sort of take it a little bit from here, and then, you know, I've got a structure we can do. But, Brian, just real quick, you told me one time also that was sort of the way it worked for you. When you first went to Trinity, you guys came in all strong stallions, all independent, all sort of full of yourself, and Clarence had a sit-down with you, and that left an impression on me, what you told me he said.
Well, he did, and I'm not sure it's good for the three of us to be on the line together, because when I went to Trinity, I was very clean-cut, stayed out of trouble all the time.
Yeah, right.
And then when I got around these guys, I'm not sure what path they took me down, but it was all their fault. But Clarence,
it's our fault. Brian got to number three in the world. It's all our fault. We'll take the blame for that.
No, we did. I think what Dickie said, you know, we're young tennis players. We were very motivated. We were very disciplined and focused in our direction. But I went off in a little bit different path. I chose what was behind door B my last year of high school, as some teenagers will do, and got in quite a bit of trouble. Had a good time partying. My tennis was going downhill, though. And when I got to college, I was still on that same path, being independent and a chance to get out. And 18, all of a sudden, doors were open to us that weren't open before, younger than 18. But and Clarence very quietly and very, in his way, sat me down and had a very simple talk that, you know, you've got some talent, you can either use it positively or you can head down the path you're on now, and you won't be able to take advantage of the gifts that you have. So, and that's about as forceful as it was. So why did that impact me? I don't know. I had my coach from on the other side of the scale, Nick Bollettieri, who you could say he and Clarence were the exact opposites. And Nick was very emotional, you know, would raise his voice at the drop of a hat, but I respected him also. So, you know, how did me personally, how did I respond to both those types? I don't know, but I can tell you, Clarence's quiet way left a big impression on me, and to this day, I remember that day that we sat in his office with that discussion.
You know, guys, what the first question is coming to me here. You know, I was in coaching a lot of years, college coaching, and always molding the strong-willed athlete and getting this herd of stallions to run together. In 1970 and 71, you guys were runner-up in the NCAA tournament. In 1972, you won the NCAA tournament for the first time there at Trinity. Actually, this is amazing, but 14 out of 15 years there at Trinity, Trinity finished in the top four. But could you just walk through real quick anything Clarence did there, the maturing of you guys? It had to have killed you, losing 70 and 71, and then in 72 you guys came through one, and then Dick, you were the individual champion in 72. I can remember your picture in Sports Illustrated. I was working in a summer camp, actually, where your sister was up in Amherst, Donna, and she actually was showing your picture around to everybody. You had won the NCAAs there. But anything Clarence did that was special about molding everybody together, and you might talk about who else was on that team also.
Bobby, you want to take that one?
Yeah. You know, Clarence, he never talked about, you know, that we had to do this, that, or the other to try to win a national championship. What he was so great at was, you know, helping each one of us individually to become better tennis players and to mold us into a team. You know, one thing that sticks out in my mind is that, you know, he impressed upon us that we all were going to make each other better. And, you know, on a daily basis. I mean, I think of a story that Brian and Dick had in their room. They roomed together, and they had in the room who had won the practice sets that they had played against each other. And, I mean, the number was up in the hundreds. But it was 100 for Stockton and 98 for Gottfried or whatever. But, you know, that was just an example of how, you know, Clarence kind of made us believe that we were all going to push each other and make each other better. And Chuck, you mentioned we had, you know, two other guys that were, you know, just as good as we were. A guy named Paul Gerken from Connecticut, and then a guy named Pancho Walthall from San Antonio, Texas. And, you know, the five of us were kind of all in it together. We had a sixth guy, John Berman, who was a couple years behind us in school. But the five of us really you know, work together all the way through this process and really work together every single day to get better as tennis players, and then with the ultimate carrot being winning a national championship.
Always into the process over the product and just do the right thing more than the success. And Dick, I want to make sure you get a chance to say whatever you want to. I know you're pressed for time a little bit here this morning. But, my God, what a tremendous career you had. I mean, the Davis Cup play five times, and you were on the Davis Cup championship team, of course, in 79. In the greatness of your result, golly, I mean, I didn't realize 18 final, 8 championships in singles, 31 doubles, and all those things. But it was molded. I think one thing I'd love to talk to you about, and I always bring it up on the show, is how important NCAA tennis was at that time. But there you went right from the NCAA, winning the NCAA, to becoming a great pro. I mean, the grounding that Clarence gave you, did that have a lot to do with it? You know, they always say Michael Jordan, the thing was, the only person that could ever hold him under 20 points a game was Dean Smith. But everybody says that Dean Smith was the reason why he became great. So did Clarence do that for you? Did he ground you?
Yes, he did. And, you know, I think Brian made a really, really good point about how he, you know, he would talk to us individually, and some of us needed to hear more than others. I mean, Paul Gerken, as an example, is a great player. He played number four at Trinity. He probably would have played number one at probably just about any other school in the country. But he didn't need much. You know, Paul was very quiet and down to earth, and, you know, I was more fiery and, you know, would lose my temper, and, you know, and, you know, Clarence, you know, he told me just little things, that not so much how to hit a ball, but, you know, how to handle the mental aspect of the game. One of the greatest things he said to me was, don't take your tennis home with you. Once you come through the gate and you're done playing for the day, that's it. Forget it. Go get your schoolwork done. Go do this or go do that, but don't worry about tennis anymore, because there's no reason. You can't help yourself. And you know, and I wasn't perfect about handling that, but I tried. You know, I always kept that in the back of my mind, and sometimes it was easier than others, but it was little things like that. And the really great thing I remember about Clarence was that, you know, he was always there when you came off the court. Because we've got to remember, back in those days, there was no coaching during a match. But he wasn't on the court with us like you were with your team at Clemson, or I was with my team at Virginia, or like Bobby is at Texas A&M now, where you can actually be on the court with guys. He was outside the gates, but he was always there when we came off the court to say, and whether you won or lost, he'd always say, well played. You know, half the time it was not necessarily very well played. But he was great about that, and, you know, he helped me with little things mentally, as opposed to much to the physical aspect of the game. And I think we all, over time, realized how much the mental aspect of the game really came into play, because everybody has physical tools, and everybody, I mean, even in today's game, everybody hits the ball well, you know, but what separates guys from the top guys from everybody else? They all hit the ball well, but, you know, it's this or that mentally, and, you know, and Clarence was probably a little bit ahead of his time in that regard, and Bobby both said how quiet he was about saying it, and, you know, but he handled everybody individually, and we had Bobby said, we had a very unique team of five guys. You know, here's an example. When we went, just before we started our senior year, 1971, all six of us, including John Berman, were playing in the U.S. Open. I mean, that's pretty impressive if you think about it. You know, that all six guys were in that tournament before, you know, we were missing school, but we were in New York playing. But it was just, and he used to come all the time. You know, remember Brian when he came to Mexico to watch us play and lose and save us up? But you know, he didn't hesitate. I mean, I met Clarence in 1963 when I was 12 years old, when he was at Forest Hills with Bobby's older brother Chuck, who had won Wimbledon that year. And so he didn't hesitate to come see his boys wherever he possibly could. And it was just, it was a fabulous relationship we all had. Very, very special. Till the day he died.
Yeah, and that film, Saxon, that you bring up, that I think that's the most important thing, because as we're all talking, things are going through my head. You know, what did he mean? What did he do? When did he do it? And I think, you know, maybe even more impactful than his X's and O's on the court was his ability to care about us. And I think, you know, those days that he didn't come to practice, that he was at the ranch, he still cared. And he still called, and whether we were in, like you say, in Mexico City or wherever we were around the world, he cared. And I think, you know, as a coach, I think if you sort of pass that feeling on to your students that you care, you know, it's not critical that you're there. You don't have to be there every second of every match for them. They don't learn that way. They don't take ownership of that if you're there all the time. But if they know you care, they know you're somebody that they can call at any time. That's the battle. You know, that's then I think the coach is successful. I think probably, Chuck, you probably have realized that long ago on your road.
It's beautiful what you guys are saying, because these are all the things you try to get across. And after years of coaching, you realize that the achievements become like, you know, fool's gold or tinseltown. The real things are like Dick, I hear Dick saying, and there's a strong-willed athlete, a Dick Stockton, the great Dick Stockton. With all you've done, Dick, I knew how you were as a competitor, but you're saying that Clarence taught you how to, they might have beat your game, but they could never beat you as a person, and that he was there, win or lose. And basically, you were able, when you left the court, you were able to separate who Dick Stockton was from the tennis. And that's what great coaches do. Guys, I got to go to commercial. I'm sorry. Dick, if you can stay, but if not, I understand. And
I can't, unfortunately, but thank you so much for having
Dick,
me, Chuck and Bob.
Hey, how can people get a hold of you? You have a website or anything, Dick, that people want to get a hold of you and get some insights on anything? Do you mind giving a website out or anything?
I don't have a personal website, no.
Okay.
What's the website?
Where are you at? Hey, listen, man. Where are you at there, Dick? Where are you located at now?
I'm in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I'm falling in love with my electric typewriter. So that's how.
You know. Okay, all right, Dick. Listen, Dick, one last thing. This is a great saying I heard. I don't know whether I got this out of Johnny Wooden book or something, but they always said that it's easier to tame a roaring tiger than inspire a timid pussycat. And you were a great tiger, the board, and you represent the United States, and you're a great, you've been a great champion, and so God bless you. And I'm, you know, I, it's great
Chuck,
for people to hear where
you
left
on
the ground.
Can I say one thing before you go to commercial? And I promise you, I'm not just making this up. I really do believe this to the depths of my soul, that when people ask me, you know, what was the highlight of your career? And, you know, they think you're going to say, well, I won this tournament, or I beat Brian Gottfried one time when he was in a wheelchair, or whatever it might have been. But that's not it for me. There's two things. One was when our team won the NCAA championship. And two was when I represented my country in Davis Cup. Both of those things being team events. And we think of tennis as an individual sport, which it is. But, you know, I think we would all agree, and probably you as well, the four of us would agree, that tennis can be an unbelievably exciting and rewarding team sport that most people don't know. They don't realize that. But those are the two things for me that I'm going to take to my grave as the two highlights of my tennis career. With that, unfortunately, I do have to go.
All right, well said. God bless you. Thank you, Dick. And guys, we got to go. I'll be right back with American Tennis.
Okay.
We'll be right back with Brian Gottfried and with Tom Tennis.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Again with American Tennis, and we're honoring, trying to salute and give as much tribute to Clarence Mabry as we can, who died last week at age 87. And just real quickly, I know, Brian, your time's limited too, but I got to, Clarence, I learned a lot studying up also. You know, I never knew his accomplishments before, except he coached at Trinity and was really good, but I knew I respected the man. That was big. But he played University of Texas. He was actually Southwest Conference champion back in 46. He started the Trinity tennis team, which he coached for 19 years from 55 to 74. 18 out of 19 seasons, top four in the NCAA. Those 19 years produced 70 at 71, 2 seconds. 1972 championship team, which got to speak to three of those great men, number one, great men, and then great tennis players as well. Clarence is in every Hall of Fame possible. He still has three daughters and a granddaughter alive, and then he has a brother and a sister. But his posterity versus his prosperity, I guess, Brian. You know, I know your time's limited here, but these are great inside things that people need to know. It's not about the forehands and backhands. He taught you guys it was about your heart, your head, and your legs, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I'm finding out now, Chuck, having been in the coaching world since leaving the tour in 84, is that, you know, we think that we're out on the court to work with a young player and help their tennis, and we are, but really so few of the players that we work with will ever go on to play pro tennis or go on to do something else. But if we can speak into their lives and make a difference in their lives, then as a coach, I think we've done our job. And looking back at some of the young, when I was young, some of my early coaches, whether it be Little League Baseball or whatever sport it was, you know, those were people that I admired and meant something to me besides what they told me out on the field. So, like I said, that sort of kept in the back of my mind, you know, can I impact this person? Can I impact his personality? Can I impact something and plant something positive in his life?
Brian, we lost this in the USA. You know, I'm always looking at the political side of things. I'm really into politics these days. But, you know, we seem to be dropping sports programs, music programs, art programs. Kids don't know how to cursive write. And these are, I always say, these are passionate things. This is where we learn our passion. It's not just about winning tennis tournaments and having high rankings, you know. Are we losing these teaching tools, I guess? And are we losing people like Clarence Mabry?
Well, again, I think we are. I think we're looking at just one side of it. We're looking at what's the matter with pick a sport or pick an activity. American tennis is something that we're all familiar with. I think, you know, I think we overcoach it. I think we overdo it. And I think that's one of the one of the things, looking back on Clarence's influence on us, again, he wasn't out there every day with us, and, you know, and we had jokes about when he was, he had other business interests at his ranch. It was a tennis ranch, so he was involved in tennis, where he wouldn't always be with us. But I'm not sure that's not the best way to do it. You don't have to be with a student every minute of every day, because then they don't go on their own. So I think that's one of the things Clarence instilled in us. We all have that competitive instinct, and I think if you can, you know, if you've got, if you teach players how to compete and you teach them how to have a passion for that game or that vocation, then they're going to learn how to grow on their own. And I think as a coach, I think that's part of our job is to instill that in them. So he certainly did that with us. Dickie mentioned about, and Bob mentioned about, you know, us growing individually as players. And I think he was certainly interested in that, and that's what helped the team as a whole.
You know, that quote last week, Vesa Ponca, who runs our tennis center up here, is one of the most noble, good men that I have ever seen, and what a leader he is. He empowers people under him. Everybody's growing in this place. I'm working is really taken off with good players, but it's the culture that he's created. But he made this comment that is brilliant. And, you know, Ray Benson is the CEO here, and he's done a marvelous job at creating also an atmosphere where people are growing and taking off. But Vesa said, look, it's not about having a system, and this is addressing what you said, Brian. It's not about a coaching system or a coach. He said, number one, it's not that the player gets good in our system. The player has belief from the coach. The coach believes in each and every player and nurtures along that 2% or 20% or 50% or 80% or 90% to 100% good that they see. He nurtures that, and that's how people get good. And nobody cares what you know unless they know that you care, basically.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to hear what Bob has to say, how things are going out at Texas A&M, and whether he uses some of those same philosophies or tactics, let's say, that Clarence used. I'm sure those things live with us all forever. So,
absolutely. I mean, what comes to my mind as you guys were talking is how, you know, there wasn't a Clarence Mabry system per se of coaching, but yet again there was, in that he believed in treating each player as an individual and giving them what they needed in order to be successful. And I think that's one of the most important lessons I learned from him as I have continued in college coaching, is that, you know, it's not about coming up with something that's going to apply to every single player on my team, but instead recognizing the differences between each of the players and treating them as individuals and maybe allowing someone to do something on the court that you wouldn't allow someone else to do. And I'm talking about, you know, a perfect example. We have a guy on our team who's a big shot maker, and he goes for a lot, and he makes mistakes. And it's my philosophy that we need to allow him to do that because that's what's going to make him successful. On the other hand, we have another player who is the exact antithesis of that, in that, you know, he is just doesn't make any unforced errors, and that's what's going to make him successful. And so rather than trying to mold both of those guys into something that they're not, I try to let them be who they are. And I learned that from Clarence Mabry.
Yeah. Well.
All right. Brian, you went on and you did get to number three in the world. You know, 25 singles titles, 54 doubles titles, runner-up, 77 French Open, but also three Grand Slams, two French and one Wimbledon Championship Grand Slam titles. You were the man among men in junior tennis for sure. I think Bob McKinley went in Kalamazoo in 68. I think you had a place against your teammates a bunch. And that'd probably be a good story for people to hear. I bet, Bobby, you're so humble that your kids don't even know that you won Kalamazoo. I hope Denton is pushing your daggone pedigree a little bit, McKinley, because I'm sure kids don't even know. But listen, Bob, this was interesting about you, Brian, is that in Wikipedia there they said best work ethic of all time, Arthur Ashe said, and then he said, you know, actually, the only day of practice you missed was the day you got married, but you made up for it the next day. You went to doubles practice. So, you know.
That's wrong. He didn't miss the day he got married.
I didn't miss that day. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he did hit.
So, we hit that morning, didn't we, McKinley?
Huh?
No. Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up Arthur, Chuck, because today, actually, February 6th is the 20th anniversary of his passing. So,
oh my!
He was another one that had a great influence and impact on all of us growing up. So, I think it's nice that his name is brought up with Clarence and together, and we did a little. I was driving my car just a second ago, and I was afraid of what Dickie was going to say because I was going to start to cry. But, you know, it's just been a great game. It's had an incredible impact on the three of us, I know, or the four of us, and taught us a lot of things, how we act off the court as well as on the court. So I'm just happy to be a part of it. And if Arthur mentioned me, you know, I'm happy that he took notice for a second of me. So thank you.
Both of you guys, you know, the thing, and this is me from the outside looking in as a coach, my mother used to have this saying that the wise man walks with the great and the small in equal dignity. She always had these one-liners like that, like you'd walk out the door, she'd say, don't take any wood nickels, love many, tough few, paddle your own canoe, son. And then she would say, dope is cheap, books are free, never be dirty or dumb. I mean, all these were sayings my mother would say. But the wise man walks with the great and the small in equal dignity. And the thing is about both of you guys, Bobby, from the day I ever coached, you treated me, you treated every person you've ever worked with. And I say that tongue in cheek that your kids probably don't even know that you won Kalamazoo and what a great player you were and your brother's heritage, you know, history and everything. And then, Brian, you too, you guys, you're the men that you are and the peace you have in your heart, your relationship with God, and all those things that matter so much after your career is over, you know, I think Clarence had to have had a lot to do with that. And that's his greatest tribute I could give him, I think, over any Hall of Fames.
Well, I don't know where we go. You said it. Amen.
It's interesting, Chuck, that comment. I had the opportunity to speak on Clarence's behalf when he was inducted into the Texas Coaches Hall of Fame. And the one thing that I said that really stuck out is that all of the players that Clarence coached turned out to be very good and successful people. And that isn't an accident, because that's what he was all about. And you can go up and down the line, you know, it's not just Dick and Brian and I, but, you know, all the players that Clarence coached have turned out to be great people. Whatever they did with their tennis, they're great people.
Brian, any good stories, quick stories? I just got to tell one. This is amazing about Clarence. And I said this, I think, yesterday when I talked to you that, in 1980, I was at the National Teachers Conference in New York, and Clarence was giving a talk. Of course, as a new coach, I rushed in there to listen, and somebody stood up and said, what is the most important quality of a championship tennis player? Clarence scratched his chin a little bit there and sort of said, well, everybody's thinking forehand, backhand, big serve, big forehand. He goes, it surely must be that the most important thing is the hunger of an inquisitive mind. I go, whoa. To this day, I remember this, and I put this on my camp booklets, and I quote Clarence Mabry, 1980 U.S. Teachers Conference. So these great men drop diamonds out of their pockets all the time, and if we're there and ready, I think we can catch them. But Brian, any other, you know, could you tell some locker room stories of things like that? Or,
locker room stories. I don't know, Bob. What do you think? You have. I'm going to hand this one off.
Well, now, I mean, I want to say something about Brian before he goes away. And don't worry, you know, I'm not
going
to tell the
really
going? Good stuff. but, Chuck, we had a – you talked about how hard Brian worked. And, you know, we had a nickname for him, you know, and his nickname was One More.
One
because
More.
Because we could never get off the court. You're practicing – and it's time, you know, I mean, we're ready to go. And he'd say, one more. And you'd hit for 15 more minutes, you'd hit, you know, forehands. And say, okay, you ready? No, one more. And just, and it made us, like I said earlier, it made all of us better. But I've never seen a guy who worked harder on the tennis court than Brian Gottfried. And, you know, it paid off, in as Dick said, in that he became, you know, one of the top players in the world.
Well,
yeah, Brian,
thanks. You know, that's the passion. You get the passion to do something. And I think when I was young, God planted a passion for tennis. And, you know, to this day it hasn't left. I'm sitting right now in front of a tennis court waiting to go on it again. So hopefully that doesn't change. And I know Clarence is probably looking down at, Bob, you're probably getting ready for practice. Dickie's out on the court. I'm getting ready to go out. Chuck, you're going. I'm sure Clarence is looking down on us, smiling at where he's led us to.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. That's well said. And, you know, Brian, you know, the respect that is for you by everybody knows you is 10 times the number 3 in the world ranking that you had. And one of the greatest players of all time. One of the greatest men of all time, through the grace of God, I know, but also through your ability to take in Clarence's teaching and to now you're passing it on to others, and that's his posterity more than the prosperity, you know. And so, anyhow, I gotta go. Sorry, I gotta go one more of these commercials. But Brian, anything else? And then I want to talk about Texas A&M tennis a little bit down there, McKinley. And see if
he hears
to what's going on, if we can right the ship here. I just want to give you guys one real quick quote stat. Do you know in the 1982 there were 42 of the top 100 players in the world from the United States? 39 had gone to college. And we don't have those stats right now. We only have, I think, 6 in the top 100. Only Isner is out there that went to college. And, McKinley, we need some of those answers out of you and some Clarence Mabry wisdom passed on there. So we'll be back in a minute. Brian, you got anything else before I have to go to this commercial again?
I just thank you. And, Chuck, I mean, we've talked a lot about us and we've talked a lot about Clarence, but, you know, my son, as you know, spent a few years under you at Clemson, and those were some great years. And When he went, I said, keep your ears open because you're going to learn a whole lot from Chuck. A lot of it's going to be off the court stuff, you know, and I think he really did. So thanks for taking care of him and mentoring him for his tenure at Clemson.
I thank you so much. And again, I learned a lot by watching people like Clarence, and you are his offspring, and we'll keep passing this stuff on, and through the grace of God, we'll keep working hard.
Okay.
So I'll be right back with American Tennis, guys. Hang on, Bob McKinley and Brian, as long as you can, but if you
got to
go.
I've got to run. Yeah, I've got to run now. Bob, I'll see you this week.
It's fine.
This is Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. We want to encourage you to consider the Nike camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
When you're spot. And if you go undefeated, you're going to have a shot to be ranked with us. Got to have a good fall today.
And this is Chuck Creasy back with American Tennis. And Coach Bob McKinley, you're always coaching, man. This is really a fantastic thing. You three guys, to be able to get you guys together. And the other members of the team were Paul Gerken, Pancho Walpe, right? And then John Berman. The 72 championship team. And Bob, you know, I was courtside in 79, right at that first court, and you had a critical match going with UCLA. This was 79. I watched every point of that championship match, and you guys shoulda, coulda, woulda. Oh, my God. And I know you lay up at night and think about how UCLA came back and escaped that match. Yeah, I think you guys went in there undefeated, ranked number one in the country, and then didn't quite win at the end. But every guy on your team, Bob, were good human beings, and they were just good people. And it wasn't the arrogance that you see in a lot of top players, the top people. And again, I think that you passed down what Clarence had taught you a lot.
For sure. I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, that was what was important to Clarence, and it's always been important to me. And, you know, it's actually in some ways maybe worked to my detriment as a coach because, you know, the guys who you mentioned that match against UCLA in the finals, I mean, our guys wanted to win that match so badly for each other, because they cared so much about their teammates that they actually tightened up in the final and didn't play anywhere near, you know, as well as they had played during the year. On the other hand, we had guys on the UCLA team come to us and say, I hope you beat so-and-so today, you know. I don't like him, you know, and he's talking about his teammate. And but I wouldn't trade. Obviously, I wanted to win a national championship as a coach. I still want to win one now that I'm here at A&M helping Steve Denton. And I haven't achieved that yet, but I wouldn't trade anything for the feeling that we created on those Trinity teams when I was there, and the camaraderie and the bonding that we had. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Bob, you're right in the thick of things with college coaching right now. And, you know, I mentioned that, you know, we're not turning out the players we did. And there's a lot of reasons for that. People say, well, now that the East, you know, the Soviet Union broke up and the East Europeans all have players, China has players, and it's a much bigger universal sport. The whole playing field's changed and that, but college used to be a necessary stepping stone. I had Dennis Ralston on a couple months back, and he said it was a necessary stepping stone from the juniors. Then you went to college. Then you went to the pros. Very seldom did you turn pro right away. Could you address maybe what you see with your broad perspective of starting your coaching in 75 at Trinity to what's going on now, and how can we get back there?
Well, unfortunately, and I don't want to paint a dark picture, but, you know, the NCAA has hamstrung us a little bit with all the rules and regulations. You know, that we can only practice, do fitness, so on, 20 hours a week, as you know, Chuck, and that's not enough. And so the only way the players are going to, you know, truly develop is if they put in more time than that on their own. And we try to encourage our guys. You know, Steve and I, since we both played pro tennis, we feel like we've got a good handle on what it takes to be a successful pro. And we try to translate that to our guys, saying, look, if you want to do this, if you say you want to be a pro tennis player, this is what it's going to take. And it's not necessarily what they want to hear all the time because they think they're doing a lot. And, you know, we have to try to gently remind them that it is a lot if you just want to be a good college tennis player. But if you want to be a successful pro, it's going to take more. And it's not easy. You know, it's not easy to do that.
Well, Edsel was on last week, and go back and listen to his show, Bob. It was so insightful. But he says it's not that we're losing players. It's not that we don't have enough in the 10 and under or something like this. The emphasis should be age 15, 16, 17. What happens to our kids is they're dumbed down by thinking college, oh, go to college, and then that's it. We see it all the time that they get there and they get a little bit scared. You know, you say, hey, they all say, I want to be a pro, I want to be pro, but down deep, Bob, they don't. And then here's why, and see what you think about this. I've always said in coaching that before you give players too many opportunities, you need to keep fog on top of the mountain till the kids are too high up to turn back. Because once they see how high the climb is, they get scared. A lot of the kids that go out there, they hear all these statistics of how hard it is, and they said, better try plan B, that's college. And then, you know, and Vesa had a really interesting point that we need to, as a country, take our best 15, 16-year-olds and say, look, five-year commitment now, you're going to play pro tennis, and then if you have to give up your first year of college, well, you give up your first year of college you know, eligibility the way the rules are now. But you got to make best of those years. As Bob, you know, frankly, what I felt like in college, what drove me crazy was I felt like there was too much meddling with my work. I felt like, you know, somebody said Nick Saban's so successful at University of Alabama because he has complete control, you know, over what his guys are doing, and, you know, he has control. But, you know, we got to the place where the bureaucracy gets so big that you have somebody who's the trainer maybe that is telling them a different story. Then you got somebody in academics comes down and gets them from practice and says, oh, no, they got to do this. Then you have somebody else that's in the weight room saying, no, 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 you got to do this. And basically the coaches have lost control of really, they have all the responsibility but not enough of the control. What are your thoughts? And I know you got to be loyal to A&M and everything, but overall in college, do you think there's some truth to what I'm saying?
I think there is some truth at a lot of places. However, saying that, I feel pretty blessed here at A&M because I feel like they do let us, to a large degree, you know, really do what we need to do to try to be successful. And we, you know, we try to run our program to be successful at the collegiate level, but to try to give these kids the opportunity to develop in and pursue the dream that most of them have, and that's to be a professional tennis player. And we try to tailor our practices and everything we do with that thought in mind, that we're not just trying to be a good college tennis team, but we're trying to work with each one of these kids individually so that they can achieve their full potential and possibly achieve their dream of one day playing professional tennis.
Well, both of you guys are the best experts. We tell our kids there's about 10 places in the country. If you want to play professional tennis, you can go to these 10 places. I always taught Indiana, of course. I think that Randy's done a fantastic job. I think down in Florida, you got some great people down there now. Brian Shelton and then Amardelic are going to do a tremendous job. Of course, you know, you've got the Georgias and you've got the other place. We always push Texas A&M. I think Peter Smith is out there doing a great job of teaching. It's obvious with his players out there that playing pro, he's a teacher, isn't he? And then you got, you know, you've got, you know, UCLA's program there with Billy. And, you know, there's some great, there's still a great avenue because of the facilities you have, the resources you have, and some of the people you have in teaching. I call it teaching first, coaching second, but it's still a great, great thing if the coaches are trying, they believe in the players like Clarence did, and then the players, I don't like the word buying in. I think if the players are devoted like, you know, you and Dick and of course, Brian were. So it's still a great thing, college tennis, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I would rather be doing nothing else than what I'm doing because I think we get a chance to really make an impact on these kids' lives at a time when it's critical to who they're going to be for the rest of their lives, whether it be as tennis players or whether it be as people. And it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to have that chance to work with these kids.
In the USA, real quick, we got a couple minutes here. Any quick thoughts, USA tennis, what do we need to do besides keep the kids on track at 15, 16, and 17, like Vetsa was saying?
Well, I guess I've got my axe to grind, Chuck, and I think that we don't compete enough. I think our kids are too worried about winning and losing and who they're beating and so on, instead of just getting out there and competing as much as possible on a daily basis in practice against the best competition. You know, I heard a story a while back where there were the number one and two players in the United States in boys' 18s that lived in the same city, and they never practiced with each other. And that's a crime. I mean, that they should be pushing each other like we talked about what we did at Trinity. I mean, you want guys playing against each other. We try to compete at A&M here, you know, as often as we can. We try to put together the toughest schedule that we can possibly play against. And our record at the end of the year isn't going to be, you know, as beautiful as somebody else who might be 18-2. But, you know, we play 17 out of the top 20 teams this year.
Well, that's
that's going to make our kids better, and that's what we believe in.
Yeah, and Bobby, you said it best with Dick and Brian. They used to keep it up on their bulletin board as college roommates, who was ahead, and I love that. And we had a talk this morning with our top kids here. We had six or two boys going after it with each other, and they were getting into it, and the emotions were rising. We brought them together and said, guys, you need each other. You need each other. Go to battle every day. Walk out of here as men. Give each other a chest butt, a hug. But you need each other to bring each other up. You know, so, Bobby, this is a tribute to Clarence Mabry. I hope that people are able to listen to this for years. We'll see. And we're really thankful to the UR Tennis Network and Jason for, you know, putting this together. And we got to sign off here in a second. But God bless you and the work you do. And man, let's do it again sometime. Let's get you on here in little better times to talk. Maybe an A&M championship. You win one, we'll get you on here. Well, we'll get you on anyway.
That sounds great, Chuck. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Made in America, born in a hot land, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's
remind you that you are always in the process of winning or losing, and it has every day you're in the process of winning or losing. It has very little to do with a win or a loss. We'd like to thank Dick Stockton, Bob McKinley, Brian Gottfried for your tribute to Clarence Mabry, and God bless the work that Clarence Mabry did all those years. His posterity will go on for years and years and years, regardless of the prosperity in his life. And all of those lessons are going to go on with these guys and so many that he touched and the lives that he touched. And that's what we're in, folks. We're the teaching business first. God bless each and every one of you. This is American Tennis, and we will see you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to UR10's radio and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR10's network. Visitors are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. All information, products, services, and use of this website is for personal use only. UR10's radio does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of the information contained within the website. Any services or products provided by UR10's radio and its hosts or contributors should be used solely for entertainment and enjoyment. We emphasize the importance of keeping an open mind and not construing the data, products, and/or services as factual.